welcome back again to another episode of the Photographer Mindset Podcast. Today is episode 30. I told myself I would try to do a year's worth and see where it went from there. So thanks everybody who's been sticking around. If this is your first time listening, the Photographer Mindset Podcast is a series about achieving the winning strategy, mindset, and attitude towards our creative passions, whether that's videography or photography. Today I'm joined by Aryan Morjiri, who happens to be both of those, an excellent photographer and someone who's actually in the industry of film and making money doing that. So we're going to get into a little bit about how that works and his mentality towards that. And for anybody who's interested in getting into the film industry, this will be a great episode for you. So I hope you like it. Is that the drive in film? I mean, because you do both photography and videography, right? So there's got to be similarities between the two and how you approach it and how you, because we're really telling stories, right? But there's that fourth element in film where you have motion, right? Whereas photography is a snapshot in time. If that makes sense, at least that's how I look at it. So as someone who's excellent in both, what are the differences and similarities when you're, you know, trying to approach telling a good story between film and photography?
I think it's achievable in both worlds. I know so many photos that I just sit and look at them like for hours, and I'm like, how much this one snap of photos telling me a story about everything. Also, there is so many other ways that you can actually make a story in a photo set. That's why on my Instagram, it's kind of my style, I try to do like swap kind of pictures. Right. So like I post only sets of pictures, not sole one picture, which I think
you'll swipe to kind of tell people the full story rather than just one image.
Yeah, like kind of give the whole details, because if you're doing a hike, I think just putting on your shoes is also part of the story, not actually like hitting that. The peak, which is basically, honestly, I got this more when I started working film, how you build a story from the day one to the wrap day.
So how do you build a story then in that sense? Like how much of building the story is technical, do you think, and how much of it is conceptual? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like there is, speaking of narrative films, I usually work on horror films.
Really?
That's
what's
kind of my thing.
Movie?
I don't know. Probably Annabelle.
Really?
It's a good one. Nice. Yeah. I really like the production design on that one.
Cool.
But yeah, how you start, there is two directors on film set, and there's the director that works with the actors, and then there's director of photography, which makes the picture, cinematographer. So I think the relationship between these two people is so important to tell two different stories in motion and emotion. And the actors are such an important factor on a film set, how they act about some delivery, that motion. So if a story is so good but the emotions are not delivered right, it doesn't work.
Right, and there's so many different elements in film, like you can picking the right actor, picking the right, we were saying, color of couch for a scene tells the story. In photography, you don't have as many tools to tell that story. You have color and you have composition, really, and you have, I guess, wardrobe if you're doing portraits. But how do you, what's the most important thing, at least in, let's talk about photography, to tell that story for you?
Photography for me is it's changing so much. I wanted to try to like do very consistent theme through my Instagram, which every once in a while I kind of feel different about it, so I kind of changed the whole thing. But I think in photography is really important the color scheme, and then also just the style of composition definitely is so important, and how you tell the story on photos is really based on how you subject some element. In my photos, I never post usually two people on one photo, because my main goal is to kind of say that word of that picture is only for that one person, that one subject.
Oh, that's very funny. The last guy we had on the show who is into film, I think you're the second guy who does film. He said something similar, that he treats his subject as like a character in a story. And yeah. then builds the scene around that. And that doesn't just stick to a person. Like if you chose a rock in your foreground as the subject of your story in photography, and then you build the landscape around it based on where you stand, and things like that. I think that's a really cool way to approach that. And it's cool to hear somebody else say that twice. it just, you know, it's more valid now for people listening to really start treating things in your pictures as characters in a movie. I've tried to start doing that and it's worked wonders for me, I think, since I did that. It was the episode with Sam East. So, but it's really cool to hear you say that. So you went to Toronto Film School, right? And you're an expert in lighting. What did you say you were? You're the grip handler? What was the term?
The proper term is key grip.
That's it. Yeah. It's one of those things you see in the credits of movies. Yeah. What the hell is that?
What's key grip? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let people know what a key grip is.
Yeah. There is grips and then key grip. And the key grip is the head of the gripping department. Key grip is the in charge of basically, there is two ways of a key grip job. Lighting, shaping the light on the scene, and everything, making everything else possible. So everything that's motion wise with the camera, if the camera wants to go from one building to another building, it's the key grip job to come up with a way, how
in which the camera moves there.
Yeah.
Right.
That's really how cool. is it going to be happening? It's a very direct relationship with the cinematographer. What kind of motion you want, and what kind of, like, is it a Jeep work? Is it a dolly or is it a crane work? These are all key grip job. And then there is also the lighting, of course, that how you want, how soft you want this light to be, or what kind of shape of the shadows you want on that wall. These are all key grip job.
So do you think to excel in videography or film that you need to go to school? Because I know you did. Do you think it's like, I guess what I'm asking is for somebody listening who's interested in getting into film, because I know I am, and I find it just is overwhelming to me. It seems like it would be very difficult to make a good short film, or, you know, make like a cool montage, because there's so many different elements, right? Zooming in, zooming out, and just 100%. So many different things you could imagine. What would be your advice to somebody who is looking to get started in film, who already has a base knowledge of photography?
So there is two ways of getting into actual film work industry. Is either go to school or start on a very like a low level production assistant, they call it PA, on a film set, which they basically... are the base of the film set. They do anything from coffee runs to all the crew to helping setting up stands. Yeah, basically. So my own advice is going to film school, because once you go to film school, you kind of start getting those base knowledge about all the equipments and everything that you need to know on a film set, on a as simple as just the communication on walkie-talkies,
right?
Because there's so many like weird stuff that's being communicated on walkies that you wouldn't know at all if you're not in film.
Really?
Let's say there's so many codes, right? It's like, what's your 20? That's like, what, just where are you? You know, it's like how long you're gonna take. That's what it is. Like, you wanna take a break, 10-1. Who
I did not know that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Just for me is because you get that confident, at least to walk on a film set, and when someone asks you, bring me an Apple box, you know what is an Apple box, and bring him. That helps you a lot, and also most times you don't actually need to start from a very low level anymore on a film set. You can start kind of more specific. Even though I I graduated film school, I still did a lot of production assistant on commercials till I started working more specific job. But at least because I had that confidence, I kind of could jump on something and show the person, oh, I know about this. Otherwise, I think it's really hard to move up on a film set because you really don't have an opportunity to make mistakes on a film set because everything is so expensive and the time of it is really expensive. On a normal like TV show, we work on every minute of it is around like actors usually get like $600-$700 an hour. So like,
wow, I'm in the wrong profession.
So like just like imagine like if you're taking 10 minutes extra to do something, that's already like within thousands of loss, right? Wow. So you need to really like, you don't really get the opportunity to make mistake, learn that much on film set if you're not already kind of come with the base knowledge,
right? I mean, so you work under somebody, but you also are freelance, right? You have your own production and film company. So you've done, you're telling me before you've done work for RAM, right? Like Dodge,
yeah,
RAM.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Was with your own company, right?
Yeah. It was a mix of my, so basically from commercials, I usually being brought on and then I bring my own crew, on the film set.
So you're being hired by somebody else. I guess what I wanted to talk about, which is really important for people who are looking to, I mean, everyone is trying to learn how to make money off photography. I mean, most of the people listening are photographers.
Yeah.
I would say you're probably, are you a videographer first? Would that be fair to say?
Yeah.
Or like, so most of the people listening are photographers, and I'm sure there's a lot, including myself, who are looking to get into film, but it's always important to know how to turn this into commerce, and networking is such an important part of it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Between leads that are already warm, who have reached out to you, and also acquiring like cold leads, reaching out to people, especially when you're in the beginning stages. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was curious about your approach to trying to land clients as a freelance person, like what you do. I'm sure going to film school and making those connections, it's easier to get your foot in the door. Yeah. But I'm sure there's been times where you've really had to work to get, I guess, your company in the position to get the contract. What are some of your networking strategies that you think are important, you know, when I guess pitching or trying to convince somebody to use you?
Back to your point, actually, I would say 60% of the jobs that I land are based on the connections I made in the film school. There is so many teachers that are already working in the film industry, and they actually choose between the students, I want to hire this person for this film. So like this feature right now I'm working on, this is like I'm finishing it. I've been working on 30 days now. The person that hired me was one of my teachers from school, and that's how. And everyone else that on that crew also, I brought on everyone that I went to school with. I never hired anyone that I didn't know, and that's the kind of the good point of the film school is when you grow together. But besides the film school, when I wanted to start working commercials, I didn't have any contact with that. So what I did personally is went to every production website and emailed the production manager on that website. Hey, I'm new to this. I want to have an opportunity to work on film. I would say I emailed like 300 people. Like at
how many responses did you get?
Maybe like 10.
Love that. You know? I knew it was going to be like that, and I wanted people to hear that on purpose.
Yeah, like maybe 10. Maybe, and out of that 10, only 10 replied. Out of that 10, two of them gave me an opportunity to go on a film set. And from there, I started working on commercials. And yeah, I started working on making, like buying coffee for people. From the beginning,
just doing the lower end of the work, right, and working your way up.
Oh yeah, just changing garbage bins. That's what I did after like film school, graduating from film school, and then from there I started making connections with other people in the departments that I wanted to work with. There is a really cool guy named Rico, which is a key grip for basically every big productions in Toronto, for it, and one, two, right. Suicide Squads, everything.
Really?
This guy is such a beautiful person too. I just talked to him and he's like, oh, you know what? I'm going to bring you on two shows. See what you got. And, like from there, I just started working in Union and, that was it. Like, honestly, if I didn't go, and that was like just seeking the opportunity. There was one flag,
right.
Like, there is so many PAs and production assistant on the film set. And sometimes it's actually sad for me that sometimes people are not bold enough to kind of go for it. I might not know something, but who cares, you know, like you might just gonna go and learn it. I was just on a film set with him at the first time I remember, and there was a flag, which was blocking some light, to a certain point. And I was just looking at the flag and I was like, what is this flag doing? And he was just looking from at me, like from far. He came to me and was like, are you interested in like what this flag, a small flag is actually doing? And I was like, yeah, I'm actually really interested. And he started explaining to me what it does. And that was the point that he was like, okay, you know what? You have something in you. I give you opportunity.
Right.
There is other 5-10 people PAs on that set that I know are still doing PA job after 10 years. And they're just, and it's not that they're not knowledgeable. It's just because they're not going for that opportunity.
Right. And I mean, that's the difference, right? You can be so well-versed and so knowledgeable, but if you don't have, I guess I would call it the X factor, and we'll call the X factor, you know, being bold, like you said, putting yourself out there,
yeah.
And putting your, like literally just showing up. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity that happens for people just by showing up on time at the place they need to be, or saying yes to a lot of different things. You never know where, you know, 300 of those emails, like you said, is going to land, right?
100%.
But a lot of people, you know, our last episode was titled It's Never Crowded Along the Extra Mile. There's a lot of people who don't want to go the extra mile. Like, I don't know how many people would send 300 emails, but the people who would send those are the people who will get to the positions that they want to be in faster. Which I think,
yeah,
is really,
like, you know, I know a lot of
people. People skills are so important too, right? Like how you manage people. I think that's something that people forget a lot, like how to get people to like you as a person, not in a manipulative way, but, yeah. You know, talking to people, asking them questions, not making the conversation always about you. I mean, nobody ever walked away from a discussion being like, oh, that guy was a dick. He let me talk about myself for the last half hour. You know what I mean? I like to take the approach with new people. I'll just keep asking them questions, like, 'cause I'm generally interested about them. And just keep asking them questions. Oh, how did you get into this? When did you do that? What are you working on now? And then by the end of the conversation, you'll realize people really are into you. Like, oh, that was a good conversation I had with that guy. And I think it's because you let them speak and let them spread their knowledge onto you. No one's ever going to think that you're, I guess rude or something like that. And plus, like you said, they'll realize that you're interested in what they're doing. People want to work with those kinds of people. You know what I mean?
No, 100%. You said that if you're not making a conversation with someone, you're just kind of like trying to get the opportunity from them. You're not going anywhere. If it's all about the ego and good ego, and it's all about just being a nice person.
Right.
Everyone, I know some people, like, they don't message me ever to say like, how am I doing?
Until they need something.
Till they need something. They just message, oh, hey, how you doing? Can you get me on this set? It's like, no.
No, I can't. Yeah, and that's just it, right? And I mean, people, there's a lot of, and this networking is digital as well, especially with the COVID age.
Yeah.
Like just spending 10 minutes direct messaging somebody back and forth, you don't know what that's, you know, where that's going to lead. Especially because we talk about Instagram and the proper way to use social media a lot on this podcast. You know, for example, I had a guy named Dave Sanford. He listens to this episode, so he might turn red. He listens to this podcast. But you know, it was kind of cool. I had no idea, you know, who he was, and I knew that he took photos for the National Hockey League, which was really cool. I'm a big hockey fan. Mm-hmm. Just messaged him on a whim, hoping that he would come on the show and we'd have a good conversation. And now, like, I'd like to say Dave and I are great friends now.
That's
and
awesome.
This is somebody who's full of knowledge, right? I'd love to shoot with Dave someday and learn from somebody who's way better than me. But my point being is direct messages and emails and stuff go a long way.
Yeah.
Text messages go a long way. And that's a bad look to just message someone when you need something because it's so see-through.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's so see-through.
Yeah. Like, you don't realize how small the industry is and everyone kind of knows each other. Once you, that person, everyone else will also know about it. I know so many friends that I never met on Instagram, you being included.
We should tell people that story.
We met only once, right?
Yeah, I'll tell the story. So when was this? November 2018? Was it summer?
Yeah.
It was like 2 years ago, and I was walking my dog through Mount Nemo in Burlington, Ontario, right? It's Burlington?
Yeah.
I think so. I was just on a solo hike with my dog, and I brought my camera because I was trying to take a picture of her, which we got. It was like her and I high-fiving sunset in the back.
I remember that.
And then I was walking back to the car, and it was you and like one of your other friends and another girl. I guess you were taking portraits on the rocks with the sunset in the background. And any other, like, I don't know, not any other day, but I thought about just continuing to walk, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But I saw that you were shooting and you all had cameras and I was like, oh, whatever. I'll go say hello, see what's up. Like, you know, it's 5 minutes out of my day.
Yeah.
We chatted for a bit, right? And you took some shots of my dog and we exchanged Instagrams and, you know, here we are. We've kept up every now and then since then.
And now
we're doing a podcast. So, I mean, it's just like really cool.
Pretty cool.
And again, it goes just to go full circle, just like showing up, if showing up to opportunity, not that that's like an opportunity, but it was an opportunity to, you know, network with another local photographer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, bigger picture is the same metaphor, the same idea, just kind of going out of your way to introduce yourself to people, and be interested in what they're doing. You know what I mean?
I'm a big believer in community, and what I love, I think it's more common in actually West Coast about community of photographers, which is now starting to pick up more in the Toronto side. It was at some point this photographer knows this location and he's going to hide it for everyone else. But now it's kind of getting people kind of just be nicer together and help each other. And I really big believer in that factor that you would only grow with your friends
it's collaboration over competition.
There's two ways to
approach it, and I guess maybe there's a bit of a hybrid. Like, you can still be competitive and want to, you know, have the best shot, but there's also finding value in growing with your community and kind of local pride, if that makes sense.
100%.
But your community can be digital as well. Like, I'm sure you do, and I have friends all over the world that I've never met.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's true. I have so many friends I have friends in the US that I never ever met, and we always commenting on each other's photos and everything and keeping contact, and I never met this guy ever. I don't know what this, he might be a catfish, you never know, but it's just it's such a good connection you have on Instagram. I love Instagram, Facebook for that reason. Like, I have so many, I got so many opportunities. I got so many on so
That's
many film sets that I just message people on Facebook and was like, yo, like, I love your work, and that's it. And a year after that, he gives me,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, when you say it, you gotta mean it. I think there's a lot of people, and I don't know, do you ever get these messages you can tell where people are just like, great work, bro? And it's just like, Are you sure?
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
Or people who comment on your work on Instagram, let's use the example, like tons of comments and likes, and then they never follow you.
Yeah.
It's kind of, what are you doing? Right? But yeah, no, just, you never know. Going back to messaging people and having friends that you don't know around the world, like, you never know, and this isn't from a manipulative sense, but you never know where yourself and those other people are going to be down the road and what kind of positions they're going to be in. And just having that rapport and that relationship will put you ahead of someone else in line for a contract or, you know, a certain shoot for a company. Like, it's just, those relationships are invaluable, and it's important to start making them now. Yeah. And if you're somebody who's socially anxious, right? Like, that's a big problem in today's society is anxiety. It's on the rise. It's a lot easier to message people behind a phone. Like, there's really no excuse.
Yeah.
What's the worst thing that's going to happen? They're going to leave you unseen. So
that's, I don't know. Yeah. Like, just contacting people and making friends with people. I'm kind of, this is my approach with people. I first, when I make a contact with them, see how I can actually help them in some certain way. Maybe I could make something easier for them. When I like, and then kind of expect something. You don't need to expect something from them. You don't approach with someone with the expectation already that guy person gonna give you something. You know, that's just morally and everything wrong.
And you're gonna be let down most of the time.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's just the nature of it. If you're not just want to be like, it's a good energy you're giving that is gonna get back to you. If you're already kind of like going with the wrong energy, you're getting that energy back. Yeah. So yeah, like, I know a lot of people, especially trying to get on film set, that they're not really going to make friends with you first, that want to get on film set. It's never gonna work.
No. And I mean, like, I'll get the odd one of those two in my DMs for this podcast.
Yeah.
You know, like, someone I've never, and there's nothing wrong with that. I got no problem with people shooting their shot. And like, this isn't the most prestigious podcast in the world. You know what I mean? It's like,
small,
but like, at the same time, you know, I'd like to have people on who aren't just going fishing, you know?
No, I like, I honestly didn't expect to be, I don't think on my Instagram, I'm trying to grow it slowly, but I didn't even think my Instagram would be a cool for getting on this podcast, especially you have so many cool podcast photographers on this podcast. And I just love, I love your effort in making this podcast. My goal as career is to be independent, a creator, to make my own content on YouTube, Instagram. I'm not there yet, of course. I'm working still for clients, but so it's really big for me that you at least putting the time to make this podcast. I hate myself. I want to make a YouTube video, but I'm like, oh, I have this other project coming up, and it's like, and I don't put my time into it, and it's just frustrating. But I love it.
Here's the thing too. It's like, I had this discussion with myself, at least surrounding the show. I mean, the thing that would make the most sense would be, you know, go find people who have 100,000 followers, get them to come on the show, and just, that's kind of your marketing plan. Which I don't want to do. I don't want to have, and that's not what I'm, that's the entire opposite of what I'm promoting on this. Especially numbers aren't everything. I know people with 1,000 followers on Instagram who are way more talented than some people with 50. And I want cool people on the show who can spread knowledge, you know what I mean? And who are in positions that people listening might want to creep into. For example, yourself, like, you're so busy 6 days a week making money in the industry, which is really cool and which a lot of people are striving for. So who cares if you think like your Instagram's lacking, you know what I mean? Like, you have a lot of knowledge to come on and spew, and you're a person that I would enjoy having on, just like every other guest. And it just, I like to always go back full circle to points, and it's just back to like, if I hadn't stopped and saw what you were doing on that hike 2 years ago, like we wouldn't be buddies, right?
So
go out of your way, like digitally and physically, not during COVID. I'm not condoning that, but don't go up to strangers during COVID. But yeah, definitely digitally. Like what's your excuse? And I mean, do it to love people that. Who you actually think you vibe with.
Yeah, love that. Love that. Honestly, you just need to make friends. that's the advice.
Yeah, man. So you also do real estate too. Like you do everything. So your Instagram is kind of your creative outlet, I imagine. And then you're working on film sets, doing commercials, movies. But you're doing real estate as well, right? And you do, you have your advanced drones, pilot's license.
Yeah.
We were talking about off the record. How do you go about, so there's, I guess what I've learned or gathered from our discussion so far is that like a lot of the contracts you've gotten in film are because of connections, which is really cool. And it's a good advocate for people listening to go to school. But things like real estate photography, right? Or headshots that you're doing. How did you go about turning that into one of your baskets of income? You know what I mean? Because that's an entirely different thing. Or is it?
Yeah, 100%. Real estate is really good way to income. Honestly, there is a lot of wedding photographers, which are sometimes mostly struggling because there's only how many times a person get married. But then real estate is really...
You are.
I mean, like, depends. But real estate is like, once you work with the agent and he trusts you, he gives you work after work, and especially if they're busy, you basically have like a growing income, right? So
run me through your pitch to an agent.
Honestly, I don't do as many real estate work nowadays, but I do
because of COVID, right?
Yeah, COVID. I think COVID actually raised the money a little bit. Like, I got more projects this year with COVID than last year.
Really?
Because everyone before would go to a showing and show
up. Open house, right?
Yeah, open house. Versus now that everyone want to just look at the photos. So I think there's a good market in there. I don't do as many projects now. I just choose like very specific projects that I'm really passionate about.
Right.
But there is so many opportunities for real estate. How you would approach it, there's so many ways. You could work for a company that does real estate photography and then you basically work as a freelancer. I've done that a lot. And then if you want to pitch to a brokerage, that would be also a really good way. You would go to a brokerage and with your iPad and show them all different cases that you have, what other people are doing, and then what are you doing and different, and kind of make a conversation with them. Don't make it about you. Make it about them.
Is there room for stylistic choices in real estate photography? You know, because you just said about what other people are doing and what you're doing. Do you mean from an editing standpoint, like how you're making your photos look? Or is there a certain way that you have to do real estate photography?
Yeah, 100%. And there is a standard real estate photography, and then there is like a magazine look, interior design kind of look, which is why I don't do that many real estate photography anymore, because so many brokerages are just looking for that standard look.
There's no artistic element to it.
Yeah, but then there is also artistic version of it, which you do. There is some stuff that are really standard, like some technical, I don't want to get into it, but windows, how you can actually make them see through HDR and whatnot. How do you light the place? Those are really... big elements, because the whole thing with real estate photography is everyone are trying to charge you more for doing less. So if you find your competitor and you kind of do one step more than them and charge a little bit less, you're already in. you are getting a gig. And real estate photography is not about one gig. It's kind of more of a, how am I making this connection and incoming gigs versus, so like you might charge someone a lot for one project, but then they're gonna be like, okay, I'm not gonna hire that guy for other projects. If you have a good price for your work, they will hire you for more projects because you're affordable for all projects, not just for that one $10 million project. You're also affordable right. for that $1 million project.
Right. And I mean, I've gotten into this with another person on the show where we talked about how to appropriately charge. So their argument was that you should always charge the same amount regardless of the project and regardless of how big the budget is, right? There's a lot of ideas that you should charge more if your client's more high tier or if the budget's bigger. Like, what do you think about that?
I would say no, actually. I kind of go opposite of it. I kind of, for real estate photography, I used to have like a square space. So I say like, okay, if it's more than 3,200 square feet, I'm going to charge this much. If it's less than that, I'm going to charge this much. And it doesn't matter anymore how much is bigger.
That's interesting. So you charge based on square footage.
Yeah, all of them. So I have like, I used to do 1,500, 3,200 and 5,000. And then between after 5,000 and 5,000 to 10,000.
This is square footage, right? Not dollars.
Square footage, yes. Square dollars, yeah.
$1 a square foot.
$1 a square foot. That would be ideal. No,
that would be because if you have a 10,000 square foot warehouse, you just need a wide angle and you make $10,000.
Oh, that would be sick.
Right?
No, but I actually walked into some projects that I'm like, oh, I should have charged this guy a lot more. But stick myself to my original plan. I walked into one project. This is the biggest probably real estate project I did, that they had an airport in their place. They had like 32 garages just for their airplanes on their backyard. And then it was like a 50 hectares property, which and they wanted photos, videos, everything. And I could have easily charged them like at least two times more than what I told them. But I mean, like,
you gotta let it go, I guess, right?
You gotta let it go, and like you gotta stick to your what you already told the client at the first place. Don't right. really think about, oh, I can get more out of this person. No, that's not how it works.
Right. I mean, it's difficult too. Once you charge somebody something one time, it's difficult to up your prices, even though I think sometimes it's necessary. Like, I've struggled with that, charging somebody something once, but like the cost of living goes up, things like that. I've found sometimes you got to push it a little bit and see where the limit is.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, like push it till you get resistance. I mean, and don't, this isn't greedy. This is, you know, like you have thousands of dollars worth of gear. You have invaluable knowledge.
No, man. Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? Like, people are paying for your creative eye.
It's true. Like, once I do any project, I kind of think about what is the profit I want to hit with this project. So, yeah, I have kind of like a threshold for my profit. If it's under that, I kind of respectfully tell that guy it doesn't work for me anymore. It's either higher than this, and that's the lowest I can do. If it's not working for you, don't think about it as like, oh, kind of like be uncomfortable and just accept it because you just want to say yes. But
I was going to say, there's a lot of people. So your mentality here is, it's not worth my time if I don't get this amount at the very least. Whereas a lot of people will go and say, well, this amount is better than nothing. But people forget the opportunity cost of doing that. Like, that time that you're undercharging for could have been spent doing something else to get you further along in whatever you're doing, right? Like, I think I remember some guy asked me to do headshots or something. And I sent them your way because I knew you did that stuff. And his budget was just so low, right? That I didn't know at the time. And you're just like, I can't do it. Like, you know what I mean? Which is good. Having almost setting those boundaries for yourself.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's the thing. If you, you kind of, it's either the, what you're profiting is either within money or more opportunities. So you might work on a project for free, but you know that that person that, like, let's say you're working in film, but you know that cinematographer you're working for, you can learn so much from him. So you kind of getting profit from that way. I worked on a project that basically I worked for free, but and it was basically just my rent, like nothing else, just my rent. For I couldn't eat for like next month, but just because that's that cinematographer, I really wanted to work with him, and I actually learned a lot. I took the project, and I'm a good buddy with that guy now. Yeah, you kind of just like I mean, you. Your knowledge and your comfort comes first, and then the business. Also, I know a lot of people that are just sitting work after work and after work. You kind of think have to think about how you kind of have to say no to some projects and put some time to yourself for yourself. Keep off.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I also think, I don't know if we've touched on this, it's really important when you're, you know, I guess, talking to that cinematographer or whoever it may be to set your, how you set yourself apart. You know what I mean? What makes you different than other people besides just having the will to learn? Like there's a lot of people who are eager to learn. But I think you need to do more than that. Just as an example, have you ever heard of Spikeball? Like the game?
No.
It's like a little mini volleyball game.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun, but, I really wanted to try and shoot, like be their go-to guy for any photography that they needed in the future. Right. Mm-hmm. So I did my research on their website and found out who their digital marketer is, their social media guy. Tons and tons of reading. I watched all the short films that he made. I learned that he, is fluent in a font called Wingdings. Do you know what Wingdings is?
No.
On your computer? It's like when you go into Microsoft Word and you change the font and it makes all those weird freaking symbols.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Okay.
So apparently this guy I learned was fluent in Wingdings. That's what the font is called. To the point where like his keyboard was replaced with it.
Oh, okay.
So just like an odd guy, right? But so I took these shots for Spikeball, like these cool... like we played in a blizzard, this game, which is, you know, it's meant for like the beach, but then I like made it look like an ad and I wrote the entire like punchline in Wingdings, like the text for the ad I wrote in Wingdings, and I sent it to him and like immediate reply. He's just like, how do you know that I read Wingdings? Like how did you know that? And nice. I like referenced, and like in the email I referenced his short movie, and now that guy emails me every now and then. I think he's emailed me 2 or 3 times just asking like, hey, like we have this thing coming up. Do you want to, would you be interested in shooting it? The last few times it hasn't worked out just because I've been traveling or something like that. But my point being, it was just like setting yourself apart. Like, I don't know how many people would go and like learn that. Right.
It's all about that conversation.
You got to get creative with how you approach people as well, beyond just being nice and being eager to learn. Like if you can add that creative element in your conversation when you're trying to get a big company or someone to notice you or someone who's in a position at a big company, I think doing weird gimmicky things like that sets you apart. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, of course, like you're on the right path, honestly, like bigger scale in a commercial set. There is a person with a production company that is just studying clients, what they would look for. I did a commercial for Etihad Airways, I think 2 years ago, something like that. And their thing is yellow. They want yellow somewhere in the picture. And we just did that as like, I just basically when I when I contacted them. I made a little proof of concept video with my buddies, and I was like, oh, we can do this for your line in Toronto, and just send it to them, and I just put some yellow in there, and they actually really love the yellow thing and light in there, and
which shows you paid attention.
It's just all
what sets you apart. It sets you apart in that, okay, this guy hasn't even hired yet, and he knows our brand, he knows our company, and he's paid attention to the small details in the ad or in the movie or the, you know, in our promo stuff.
Yeah.
And that sets you apart immediately. It's the same concept as what I was talking about. And you can do that. This isn't just all for film, for people listening. Like, you can do this in photography. I always recommend, when people are trying to get like brand work, go to their social media page, find the common denominators, like Arctic Zone, which I did stuff for. 90% of their pictures have dogs in them. So like, of course I'm going to send them stuff that involves dogs. Right. Yeah. Or like, maybe some company you're doing for is black and white. Why would you send them anything in color? It's just, you got to be smart like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because every brand, especially, they have so strict branding name after them that they want something specifically that way. Like, it's just their thing. And there is a lot of stuff that you can get creative about, and then there is stuff that you really have to follow the guide. Guideline for it, like that yellow light being one that is just their thing. You can do a lot of other things being creative, but that one thing is what they're known for, their branding, so that you have to do that.
Whether you hate or love it, you got to include that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And that's comes back to like actually my thing that I love to do stuff for myself, which is because sometimes I think some things are just stupid and they're not working and but the clients really love it, so like do it for it.
I mean, that happened to me with I'll go back to Arctic Zone. I sent them a first round of photos, which I loved personally. I was like, these are awesome, and they disliked them. And I was like, oh, it was so deflating. And then I sent them a second round of what they suggested be changed, and I was like, man, really? Like, these are not as good. And I sent the second set, and they were like, oh, we love them. And I was like, are you kidding me? Do you know how much extra work the first set was and how much better it looks personally? But you got to put your ego aside, right? You got to put your pride aside sometimes, and you just got to roll with it. But that's why it's good to have a creative outlet, whether it's your Instagram or just like, I like to take iPhone photos where there's no pressure of just like friends and stuff, where I don't have to edit them. And they're just, it's important to have that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
No, for sure. That's the thing. It's like there's a, once you're working for a client, they're the one they're paying, you have to make them happy. So whatever it takes to make the client happy, you have to do that. But actually, back to your point, it's such a good thing to take iPhone pictures with no pressure. Oh, I love it, man. I'm slowly getting into it. I really felt good. Like, I did the hike and I took some iPhone pictures and they got featured in BlogTO, and I felt so good about it, because I usually like go so hard on myself taking some pictures, and day I just didn't have my wide angle lens, so I just used my phone, and I was like, it was really good feeling.
Man, the iPhone's important. I use it as just like it's my, you're being creative, but there's no pressure. Like, just snap a couple pics, and it's like my photo album. It's my memory album for like friends and stuff like that. And it's good to have that. I think people should have, doesn't need to be that, but just something where there's no pressure, and you have the freedom to do what you want, especially if you're doing, if you're working a job, or you're, if you're a photographer or anything else where there's lots of creative restrictions, that can be frustrating. Right. And I feel like it'll do wonders for you if you have an outlet. But Aryan, this has been amazing, dude. I think we're going to cut her off here. And I'm so happy you came on the show. And I'm happy our hike, our my hike and your hike, our crossing paths led to this. That's pretty neat.
It was a really pleasure to be here. I really love your work and this kind of talks. It's so, I learn a lot from them. And it's just cool that to see like other dudes like me and you are out there just like trying to... make friends.
Right on, man. All right, you take care.
All right, man. Cheers.
Thanks again, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Photographer Mindset Podcast. I hope this series continues to give you value and drop little nuggets of knowledge into your everyday life and into your photography life. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, please feel free to share it on your social media pages, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Until next time, go get shooting, go get editing, and stay focused. See you then.